This message is part of the educational ministry of Columbia International University. We've been preparing world Christians to know Him and to make Him known since 1923.
It's wonderful to be back at CIU. Many, many years ago, I was here, and God did something new in my life during that time. But it's great to be here and remember those days and God's great grace and goodness toward us. Tom Peters, who's the author of The Pursuit of Excellence, he says he was reading a story in Fortune magazine about CEOs who had dyslexia. And of course, until recently, these persons were treated with a great deal of treated like dirt in the school system. Anyway, in this article on CEOs who had dyslexia, he says that there was one, the head of Kinko's, and he said that when he was a kid, he was totally battered and bruised by the other kids at school. And Peter says he loves this. His mom would say, "Paul, don't worry. In the long run, the A students work for the B students, and the C students run the businesses. And the D students get the buildings named after them." So I chuckled as I read this, and I said, yeah, the D students also get to be special alumnus. But really what Tom Peters was talking about is that it doesn't take just smarts to be effective. And as I think of our family, and I think of God's blessing, and I think of this tremendous heritage, all I can say, thank you, Jesus. It's because of Him. It's not the heritage, it's not the family. It's because what Jesus has done and is doing in us. I want to share in the minutes that I have about the influences that came on my life as a student here at CIU. As you know from what has been said already this morning, being born as a missionary kid in Cuba and raised there till I was 16, that was a tremendous experience because really was born into a church planting movement. And seeing what God was doing among those students in the Bible school as a kid running around in on that campus, enjoying myself and, of course, having all kinds of the benefits of being on a farm with my own horse and my own animals and learning to swim in the river. But what really was the strength of that experience was the interaction with the students as a young fellow. In fact, when I was about 10 or 11, some of the students of the Bible school would come around, and they said, "Alan, you know, how about getting together with us to pray?" So I had to milk goats in the morning about 5 in the morning. So I said, "If you come and wake me up, and I'll go and milk the goats, then we'll pray together." So they'd do that. Every morning they'd come at 5 in the morning. We had great big windows, and they'd poke a stick through the window and wake me up. And we had built a little banana patch, in the banana patch, a little hut that we made it as our place for prayer and worship. And there we had a little altar, and we had a place where we'd kneel. So these two fellows and I, here, just think of it. These guys were 21, 22, 23. I was 10 years old. The three of us in that little hut every morning, reading the Bible. In fact, I can still remember we were going through Proverbs, then praying together. I don't know what draws a kid of 10 years old to want to pray. My mother had led me to the Lord a few years earlier, reading Pilgrim's Progress. And as Pilgrim came to the cross, that big load of sin on his back rolled away. And I said, Mom, that's what I need. I have a roll of sin. I sense its weight. She said, come to Jesus. So you see, that desire to pray was not something of my own. It was nothing that I was wanting to do. It was the Spirit of God as a young boy wanting to be with others in the presence of the Lord. Well, these guys kept moving me. Said, okay, Alan, you got to go with us. On the weekends in that Bible school, they studied for 4 days, and then 3 days they were out in the field doing church planting. So you got to come with us. And so we went to Santa Clarita. That was just out, a little village. And there they'd say, okay, Alan, now you've got to do something. So I started doing a little Bible class, and I had some tricks and other things that I would do with kids. Then they kept pushing me, and they said, Alan, you got to preach. And now I was a few years older, and so I did preach. And I still remember that first sermon as a young kid that I preached. What shall it profit a man to gain the whole world and lose his own soul? Well, I got back to campus, and the news got out at the school that I had preached out in this little village. And my dad's co-worker, Lavastida, a man that really wanted to encourage everybody in their Christian growth, and Lavastida said, Alan, why don't you preach in our chapel here at the school? So there I got up at that chapel and I preached, what does it profit a man if he gain the whole world and lose his own soul? But what I am telling you is that afterwards I came when I was 16 to go to high school and we were up at Prairie where my grandparents were. But in all these schools, there was nothing for a young person to do in Christian work. Whereas my experience in Cuba with the Cuban church was anyone who's a Christian, young or old, kids, teenagers, all of us, let's get involved in praying and talking about the Lord Jesus. So I got here when I was 22 years old after being at Prairie Bible Institute. And the reason I came to CIU was that God had put in my heart a great desire to teach. I'd seen my dad teaching, I'd experienced, I'd seen transformed lives by teaching. I said, I want to teach. And God was already calling me to go back to Cuba. And I don't know if it was because I wanted to go home or really it was the call of God, but that's where I was going to go. I was headed there. And so I came to CIU to learn how to teach. Well, let me give you three influences that God used here, and others have had these similar influences. The first one was the exposure to a masterful teacher. You know who I'm talking about. Who? Buck Hatch. In fact, you know, I read the course descriptions, hermeneutics. I'd never heard that word before. And I got into Buck's class, and he began to show me how to open up the scriptures. And beginning, oh, this is biblical interpretation. And then I went into his progress of redemption. What is this? And then I discovered that there's a story. And I had studied, you know, book by book, but I never put them together. Here's a story of the gospel, a story of Christ from Genesis through the end. And then I got in his prophets class. Prophets, was, what are these? Then I learned something about historical background and how these prophets spoke at different crises in the life of and the history of Israel and Judah. So every course I could find that Buck was teaching, I was there. The only course I missed was his course on marriage, and I took that afterwards after the videos were done. But what was it about Buck Hatch that so influenced me? Yes, it was the content. This is the first time I began to love biblical theology. But it was also his method. You know, today in our methods, you know, I use PowerPoints and I use, videos and I use flip charts and I use, you know, all kinds of technology. You would put Buck Hatch with a couple, three students in his Bible and a piece of chalk. And that's all he needed. In fact, I've never seen a teacher so masterful in the way he would use the chalkboard. Now, I do diagrams, you know, but I print them all out and I hand them out. And what Buck would do, he'd start on the board and he'd do one little piece, the next class another piece, and then I'd wait for the end of the chart. By the end of the class, there it was, the whole thing. So I became a chart fanatic. And not only the chart on the progress of redemption, and there's all kinds of different types, and I'm trying to collect those charts from different people. There's also the chart on prophets and the chart, on biblical psychology. And all of these are just, they brought the whole course together for me. But the third thing about Buck is what he was when he taught. I'd never seen a teacher that was, you know, he was shy, he was reticent, he was not wanting to be forward. And he'd come into the classroom, and as soon as he would talk and the chalk was in his hand, he was transformed. But what came out of him was not just eloquency and a great lecturer, but a man who spoke from his heart. He was experiencing what he was teaching. In fact, one day he came to class and he said to us, "I'm sorry, I cannot teach today. I don't have a word. It's not yet here." And he dismissed us. I had never seen vulnerability and weakness that God used to bring tremendous spiritual power and grace. So I told my kids later when I had them, every one of you, you've got to go to CIU and you've got to get under Hatch. What an influence in my life, that man. Yes, I did go back to Cuba. I did teach, and it's the best way to learn some of this stuff, once you've got it, to go out and teach it. And so I taught it in Spanish, contextualized it for my Cuban students. For 4 years, I went through all the courses that I'd taken from Hatch, and I taught them again in Cuba. Go and do likewise. Whatever course you're taking, because that begins to make it alive in your own soul. The second influence, besides exposure to a masterful teacher, was a taste of experiential learning. Now, as I told you, I wanted to be a teacher. And so I checked the catalog, and they didn't have any specialty on teaching. That was before, you know, we had a major in education here. But there was one class. Sarah Petty had a class for teaching Bible in the public school. Well, as I checked around, it was all women. So another fellow student of mine, Gedney Widening, said, okay, let's crash the course. So we were admitted to the class, and we sat in the back row. In fact, I just read in my 1955 yearbook, this is what Louise Lazaro wrote. She says, shall we ever forget the back row in methods class? That's right, I always was in the back row, not just because of the alphabet. There's a bit of rebellion still in me. But, she said, I hope we never have pupils like that to teach. Well, Sarah Petty was a masterful teacher. I learned there, first of all, how to do instructional objectives, and then how to do a lesson plan. But I said, this is experiential learning. Then we had to get out of the classroom and go out into the schools and start teaching. And who showed up at my classes? Mary Faith Phillips. And she was there to observe, and she was there to critique, and then she was there to affirm. I tell you, I've never had learning where that kind of lab was established in real life. And I was hooked. So when they asked me the next year after I graduated to stay on, I stayed also training other men to teach Bible in the public schools. It was such a great, great experience. One last area of influence. Not only a masterful teacher and experiential learning, but active in Christian ministry while being in school. At that time, they called it Christian service. I think it's field ed today here. But Tom Petty was the head of Christian service. And, you know, Tom was kind of a strange person, because he'd come upon you and surprise you with an assignment that was immediate without any preparation. And so, okay, the street meeting, Thompson, get down, Main Street, street meeting tonight. We'd get down there and try to put it together. Or chain gang, go to the chain gang, or in the fair. And we did all kinds of Christian service. Then I came to Mr. Petty and I said, I like all these different varieties, but I really need to preach. I need to learn to preach. And I need to preach in a church where I can preach every Sunday. Could you find one for me? And so he did. Found there outside of Camden, Red Hill, Dr. Calhoun, a pharmacist from Sumter, had started Community Bible Church, invited me over there, and I began to preach in that southern, rural, cotton place. And oh, it became such a fruitful place. Every week out there with these people, talking with them, conversing, finding about their needs, and then preaching, and I was preaching Hatch again. And but I tell you, combining that service with my training here was what was making me and developing me. And that experience at Community Bible Church was very formative. It was there then that at the end I was ordained. My father came to that ordination service, and Dr. Fleece also participated. And that church there continued to support us in ministry for many, many years. In fact, I'm hoping to be there before I return this weekend once again. So, there was one more aspect of this active ministry. And that was that Mr. Petty not only gave us assignments and found assignments, but he took us with him. One day he said to me, "Alan, be here at 5 in the morning." Okay, I was there at 5 in the morning. You know, he was chaplain of the South Carolina Penitentiary. I said, "Alan," when I got in the car the next morning, he said, we're going down here. There's a man on death row. And we're going to walk the last mile with him." Now, here I was. This is kind of a serious assignment. How do you talk to a person that is going to die in a few minutes? I was speechless. So we entered into his cell. And there I could observe the life of a person counseling in a time of tremendous, tremendous need. Mr. Pretty was very easy, very content. He had led this man on death row to the Lord, and he had been discipling him. And now the time had come for his death. His name was Chastain, and he would say, "Chastain, just in a few minutes, are you going to be with Jesus? Thank Jesus for interceding for us before the Father, because that's why you have been pardoned. That's why you have been cleansed. Thank him when you get there in a few minutes." The guard came. We were to walk the last mile. I'd just been observing, taking it all in. Tom Petty, Chastain, and I started to walk down that long hall. All of a sudden, Tom's voice started singing. Chastain joined and I joined, "Just as I am, without one plea. But that thy blood was shed for me, and that thou bidst me come to thee, O Lamb of God, I come." They put Chastain in the chair, bound him. Last words, "I'm going to be with Jesus. He has forgiven me." Put the hood over him, and he was gone. I said to myself, "Tom, why did you bring me to this situation?" There's a great deal of learning when someone models, and we then can observe and learn. This then was the shaping period of my life, and I took these lessons from here, and God has taken them and multiplied them and deepening. I finally then come up with this DNA of CIU. Divine truth in jars of clay. That's the D. N, nurturing relationships in community. And the A, aggressive ministry. That's the DNA that God left with me at CIU. Thank you.
We hope you were blessed by this message. Additional audio messages and learning resources are available at www.ciu.edu/bookstore or call 803-807-5263. Messages are also available by podcast at iTunes. CIU is a regionally accredited biblical university offering undergraduate and graduate degree programs. Our purpose is to educate people from a biblical worldview to impact the nations with the message of Christ. Thank you for letting us minister to you today.